Chapter 54.
The wheel turned. Posey orbited. The hours passed like lazy summers. There had been some sort of breakdown in communications between the ship and the party in the groove. It went on for an hour, with no one answering the transmissions from the ship. Goma was certain it meant the worst. She had thought of asking Vazin to take the ship down immediately. She did not mind abasing herself by begging, not when other lives were at stake. But eventually there was a crackle, a voice she had no trouble recognizing.
It's Ru.
Goma took the call.
We were starting to worry about you. Is everything all right down there?
Everything's fine. I had a problem with my suit, but it's fixed now. And I didn't suffer any harm.
She sounded defeated rather than ecstatic, but also alert and satisfactorily aware of her immediate situation.
What about Hector?
Hector's all right. No cause for alarm. We've been checking on his suit status periodically. He's warm and breathing. I can't say we've had any deep and meaningful conversations, but there'll be time enough for that later. Are you ready for him?
Agandari says she can bring the primary lock into play for long enough to load him. What about Kanu and Eunice?
There was a silence before Ru answered.
Kanu's good.
Eunice is dead. Goma's first instinct was to respond with a flat denial, as if this could not be possible under any set of circumstances.
No.
It's true. My suit went wrong. The damage was worse than we thought, and I blacked out. When I came around, Kano and Eunice had swapped the good part of her suit onto mine.
She was already gone, Goma. After that, there was nothing to do but wait for the wheel to turn. When the groove was approaching 40 kilometers from the surface, Vazin once again summoned the nerve to take Mposi down, landing on the same level as Kanu and Ru, but a few dozen meters to one side. It was still much too close for comfort, but the shorter the distance they had to move Hector, the better. Goma, somewhat rested by then, but still having to argue her case with Dr. Andiza, was finally allowed to go out in one of the suits. Grave and Loring were dealing with Hector, coaxing him back to sufficient wakefulness to be able to assist with getting himself into the primary lock, access to which involved holding Mposi in an even more precarious position than before. Goma had expected Ru to be up on her feet, wanting to be the first aboard off the cold and narrow shelf, but she was sitting on the groove's edge, her feet dangling over the side, next to Eunice. On the other side of Ru was Kanu. They were both still wearing their helmets, but Eunice's had been removed and now sat behind her, her head fully exposed to the vacuum. Goma moved to her side, standing perilously close to the edge herself. Ru and Kanu were also the only ones wearing chest packs. Viewed from the side, Eunice's posture was one of acceptance, even tranquility. Her gloved hands rested in her lap, shoulders relaxed, head lolling only slightly down towards her chest within the open neck ring. From a distance, she might have been taking a snooze or lost in reflective meditation. Goma sat down next to Ru.
Do they need help with Hector?
No,
Goma said, swallowing hard before continuing.
I think they've got that covered. But we can't hold station here for very long. Vazin wants to be up and off the groove as quickly as possible. It's not safe.
You don't say. But there was no malice in Ru's remark, just a quiet exhaustion.
I hated her, you know.
You had grounds to.
And yet she did this.
She could have lived, but she gave herself up for me instead.
Was it on her mind all the time? Is that why she was so keen to stay down here with me?
No one could have been that calculating.
Except her?
Not even Eunice,
Goma said. She began to push herself up from the ledge, thinking how easy it would be to make a mistake even now.
Ruh, Kanu, we have to go.
I'm staying with her. Before Goma could say a word, Ruh went on. Kanu should leave, definitely. He needs to get back to Nissa, but my suit is good. I only need to ride the rest of the way to the top of the wheel.
We could move her now.
She's frozen. We'd break her like an ice sculpture.
We can't leave her here, Ruh.
I'm not saying we should, but there'll be another sunrise before we reach the top of the wheel. I want her to see the sun one more time.
You're set on this?
Yes. And if you know me as well as you should by now, you won't try to argue me out of it.
I wouldn't dream of it.
Goma stood up anyway.
Kanu, are you ready to go? Your suit doesn't have anything like the life support capacity of Ruth.
You're leaving them here?
He asked, rising carefully from the ledge. No, I'm just going to explain the situation to the others. I think it'll be easier face to face. Then I'll be back. I'll see out that sunrise too. Vasin can damn well come and fetch us later.
You don't have to do this, Ruh said.
Neither of us has to, Goma said. But we're doing it anyway. It's the least I owe her. She brought you home to me.
On the way out from Poseidon, Mposi slid beyond the bracelet of moons and then through the drifting corpses of the watchkeepers, the freshest of their cruelly transected bodies still glowing along the geometric planes where they had been severed, a testament to killing energies both invisible and incomprehensible. The older corpses, those that had been littering Poseidon's space for millennia, were as dark as coal, mute and mindless witnesses to this latest bout of machine carnage. No part of that alien defense system touched little Mposi, with its cargo of humans, one comatose, another a frozen corpse, and one elephant. But as soon as it was clear of the rebuked and punished watchkeepers, the moons fell out of their single orbit and reconstituted the daunting thresh of their original configuration. Something had been opened to them. Now, for the time being anyway, it was closed again. At a safe distance, Mposi made rendezvous with a larger travertine. The lander docked. All was chaos for at least 30 minutes, as medical personnel and equipment moved between the two ships. Goma kept well clear of the lock, remaining aboard Mposi with Ruh until the worst of the rush was over. Eventually they were underway again, making the return crossing to Orizon. By then, Ruh and Goma were in their room, holding each other until sleep came to mend the edges of their tiredness. Goma kept seeing Eunice, her face to the warming sun, the ice crystals turning to water drops, her eyes wide and receptive, that golden light flowing along her optic nerves like molten metal, coursing through the cold runnels of her brain. Lava flowing down an ever-dividing network of channels, bringing her back to life.
"Bury me with the risen," she had said, "but take my heart back to Earth."
When they woke, late the next morning by the ship's onboard clock, there were two kinds of news. The first was that a watchkeeper, one that had not tested itself against Poseidon, was now following Travertine. The alien machine was maintaining its distance for now, neither approaching nor receding, and its intentions could not be guessed at. Vasin said they would hold their course. If the watchkeeper had other plans for them, so be it. Meanwhile, Nissa Mbaye died. All credit to Dr. Andiza's small surgical staff. They had done everything they could, and at times it even appeared to be on the cusp of bringing Nissa back. Indeed, she seemed to be fighting for life with great vigor. Although she was in a medically induced coma, her neural activity was much more extensive than Andisa would have normally expected, and in areas of the brain that, given her clinical state, and the damage she had sustained ought not to have been active. "Something's going on in there," she told Goma. It had given them temporary hope, but all efforts to expand that trace of borderline activity into something more coherent, more sustained, were soon undermined. Nyssa was fading. Whatever they had seen was the last flowering, not a return to life. Captain Vazin gave the order for Nyssa to be placed into immediate skip-over.
"Our medicine can't save her, but we won't give up on her this easily, Kanu. For better or for worse, a lot will have happened by the time we return home. Whatever home might be, there may be a chance for her then."
"It won't help,"
Kanu said.
"Nor will defeatism. It costs us nothing to bring her back. Don't fight me on this one, Mr. Akinya. You won't get very far."
A few hours later, Goma found Kanu alone. She had not spoken to him since Nyssa's death.
"I'm sorry. I hoped we'd brought her up in time."
Kanu's face was impassive, holding back a freight of emotion she could barely guess at. But then, they had both suffered losses on the wheel.
"You did all you could, Goma. If anyone's to blame, it was me. Nyssa was only ever meant to help me get to Europa. Everything after that, it was all an accident."
"Don't cut yourself up about it too much. She met the risen Kanu. She walked in Zanzibar. None of the rest of us got to experience that. When I spoke to Nyssa on Icebreaker, she didn't sound like someone being tugged along against her will. She appeared to be magnificently in control. I liked her. I admired her. I wanted to spend more time in her company."
"She'd come to an accommodation with it all by then. I accepted what had happened."
"Then you need to do the same. Blame anyone but yourself. Blame Swift. Blame Eunice. Blame the Watchkeepers. Blame me if it helps, but you are not at fault."
"I can't blame Swift. Ours was a joint enterprise."
"Begun for the best of reasons."
"I'm afraid that's no excuse."
"It's enough for me. I risk my neck to bring you up, Kanu. Don't punish me by taking all this on yourself."
"I wouldn't dream of it. Anyway, we've both lost Eunice, although you knew her better than I did. You have my sympathies. How are you feeling?"
"She wasn't my mother. She wasn't Mposi, she wasn't Ruh. We only spent a few days together, all told."
"But against those few days, you're aware of the entire span of her life. You may not have known her personally until recently, but you've known about her for your entire existence."
"We all have." "Eunice died," Goma said firmly. "That's what we've always been told. In deep space, on her own, whatever she was, whoever she was, it's not so simple as we'd wish. She wasn't Eunice. She didn't even claim to be. She knew exactly what she was, where she'd come from. She even told us she'd been a robot, but the robot became flesh and the flesh carried memories that felt real to her. Who are we to deny that? And now there's a body to bury and a heart to take back to Africa."
"Then for the sake of argument, for the sake of decency, perhaps it would do no harm in the grand scheme of things if you continue to think of her as Eunice. A branch of her. A wing. Mansions have wings. Why not people? Mposi and I were brothers, but we had different mothers. These aren't simple times for any of us, Goma. But we muddle through. We make things up and hope those constructs serve us. Occasionally we don't fail as badly as we might have."
"That's meant as an encouragement."
"It's the best I can manage."
They spoke of the terror and of the wheel. Goma had not experienced the terror, and could only imagine the depths of insight Carno had endured as his ship passed through the chasing moon. Equally, Carno had not been privy to Eunice's ruminations on the deeper meaning of the grooves, or how they constituted an instruction set for altering the base level of reality. Goma recounted Eunice's ideas as best she could. Carno listened with interest, and the occasional wry smile. Goma hoping that the topic was sufficiently diverting to push his grief to one side, at least while they talked.
"So, we're left with a question," she said. "Did they do it? Or did they fail?
Could we ever know?
If the universe hasn't suffered a vacuum transition, if it had, we wouldn't be around to debate it.
On the other hand, it might be about to do so and we wouldn't have so much as an inkling of it. Or it could soldier on for unguessable eons, always on the verge of collapse but never quite getting there. There's room for a little history, I think."
"The Watchkeepers were denied access to the wheel," Goma said. "But we were allowed to interact with it. On some level, the M-Builders must trust us with the knowledge. Does that mean we should try reaching them?"
"You mean dig down into quantum reality?"
"Into the floorboards," Eunice said.
"I imagine that might be the work of a considerable number of millions of years, so there's no immediate rush to make a decision. Not today, at any rate."
She forced out a smile of her own.
"Is it hard to live with?"
"The terror."
"The knowledge, the futility, the end of everything, the pointlessness of every act? Can you go on now that they've put that in your head?"
Carno, to his credit, did at least give every sign of considering his answer.
"Not easily, Goma. I'll be truthful. I've seen it, felt it deep in my bones, not just as some abstract theoretical result, but as a deep, governing truth. I know that everything I see, everything I do, counts for nothing. We could sit here now and solve the mysteries of human happiness, and all of that would be forgotten, erased, as if it had never happened. Which it may as well not have done."
"That sounds unbearable."
"It is. But then again, the eternal verities haven't gone away. I watched my wife die. I saw her brain patterns fade to nothing. And although I know that our lives were meaningless, that neither of us has contributed anything to posterity, I still wept. I wish she were here with me now. I wish I had her in my arms so I could ask her forgiveness. I would like to be back with her in Lisbon, feeling the sun on our faces, deciding where to eat. And I am hungry, and I have a bruise on my thigh, and will be very glad when it heals because it is uncomfortable. So in that sense, I am still a human being, living in the moment, buffeted by wants and needs. Is that enough to build a life around, to carry on living?"
"Eunice knew the tarot. She found a way.
She was hardly typical."
"No, but I don't think you are either. We need you, Carno. You've come through something truly momentous. You need to stick around for the rest of us. We need your wisdom."
"My wisdom?"
"Your experience, whatever you want to call it."
He acknowledged her point, but looked discomforted by it. She wondered what he was thinking.
"What about you?"
he said.
"You mentioned Africa, but unless I'm mistaken, you've never been to Earth."
"Always the first time for everything, including that. Anyway, they have elephants there. I like elephants."
"So do I," Carno said. "But to be honest, it took me a while to warm to them."